Welcome to a Big MX radio podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. This podcast brought to you by Fox Racing Canada, Race Tech, Moto Coatings Company, Guts Racing, W Wheels, and a host of others. Go to the website, check it out, see who supports Big MX Radio, because we love all of our sponsors who help us out so much. And if you're looking to make some horsepower leading into Loretta Lynn's, if your kid happens to be going to Loretta Lynn's, maybe they just had a regional and they know they'll be going, you might want to call up Money Inc. and get Steve Street to get his fingers into that motor, get some extra horsepower to the ground when you're trying to get that whole shot at Hurricane Mills. Like I said, I am your host, Brad Gebhardt, but with the on the line, an absolute expert in the sport of motocross. Hell, he's been working in the industry damn near over 20 years. Andrew Hobson, Hoppo, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you today, bud?
I'm not doing too bad, man. Appreciate you making some time. You are essentially subbing in for the great Zach Herron, who is he's down a leg right now. He had himself a nasty spill in out at Verbadilla for that the J-Day event. So he's on the mend, unable to take the call. So we got to tag the next man up. And since we're in conversation pretty much every goddamn day because of the other podcast that we do, which is called The Racer's Mindset, it just made sense to grab your ear a little bit so we can bounce some ideas off each other, talk about the race that just happened.
Hey, that's awesome. Yeah, thank you for the offer to step up and chat about this race. It's been a while since I've actually spoken in detail about races, but always interested in results and see who does what and how the day plays out, because there's so many angles to look at all this stuff and these results and all these guys that are giving 100% on the line every weekend. So, good job to all these guys that qualified and did not qualify, because I know how hard it is to try and do that sort of stuff. So,
no doubt. Was there ever a time that you tried to qualify for either a U.S. national or even Australian national back in the day?
Back in the day, we're going back some time in Australia when they
used to have Mr. dual shocks and air cooled machines. No, you're not.
No, I came here in '94, so like '91, '92, I would try and qualify for Mr. Motocross. I think I made it once in South Australia. I don't know. I can't remember.
Do you ever race Manjimup? Isn't that like coming up next weekend?
Yeah, no, I never rode Manjimup, but I did go there for the 91 Motocross the Nations, 92. Long, long time ago, yeah.
That was the misfit team. That was the team no one wanted to go with. I think that's LaRocco,
Lyles, and Emig.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that was a great weekend. Oh, man, that's going back in time.
No doubt.
That was, that was a great weekend. And the Evetts and Bale dodged every practice, and come out and did three laps, threw it down, and then went and won the moto.
Well, that's sort of adding to the legend that is JMB. Why I'm sort of like mixing that in there is you and I are both practitioners of the sport, albeit not nearly as fast as the guys we're about to talk about on this podcast. But like you mentioned earlier, like there are a ton of riders that qualify for this race. There's 80 in both classes. There's 71 in both classes. I'm not great at math, but I think that's 142 individuals who show up. All of which, if they passed me, even if the guy who got 71st, how you get 71st in time qualifying is usually you either have a heck of a get off, you never get a real clean lap in, or something happens to go wrong with the motorcycle. But either way, regardless of how it ended up, whoever got 71st in both qualifying sessions in either one of those two classes, if that person was to pass me at a local track day at either Fox Raceway, Glen Helen, Cahia Creek, or any of the other California stalwarts, I wouldn't be able to read the numbers off of their number plates, because they would absolutely pass me like I'm standing still.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, to the guy that's 71st, you know, kudos to him as well for, one, applying for a pro license.
Of course.
And paying to try and qualify and enter. Obviously, he has a goal and a plan and wants to be good and better. And obviously, the goal would be to qualify, right?
Right.
But like I said, I mean, it's the game changes. It seems to change. The level and the game changes every year. And you always think you get better every year, but then if someone else steps it up. So you're sometimes always in a deficit when it comes to outdoors and supercross.
Yeah, and what blew me away is one of the things that I noticed, like I like looking at practice times. And if you look at the 250 practice times in particular, fastest lap time was set by Levi Kitchen in the second qualifying practice. He throws down a 222.28. He was less than 0.2 of a second faster than Joey Savacci, 0.2 of a second. The naked eye probably can't even pick that up. Right. They would be side by each coming across the finish line, if they had done the lap together. But 39th or 36th rather, the last person who went straight into the main event or the straight into the motos, Crockett Myers, who, for those who were watching Arena Cross this last year, you know, Crockett Myers, he rode KTMs this last year. He rode Kawasaki's. He was on the Husqvarna for a round. Now he's on Yamaha with the Rock River guys. So he's changing things nonstop. He's adapting. He's getting used to a new motorcycle. A minute 31, which sounds slow when you, but until you realize that's less than 7 seconds a lap slower, well, like 7 seconds is usually the gap between like first and fifth at like a local, pro race where you have a couple of pros showing up. Like there's usually about a 4 or 5 second gap between those guys. 7 seconds between first and 36th.
And you break that down. I mean, you're only talking tenths in each turn.
Yeah, well, you're like you're talking tenths of seconds between each rider. Like I think it worked out. I think it added up. It was 7.8 seconds divided by 36 guys is 0.21 of a second per guy. Yeah. That is so minute of a change. And yes, of course, if Crockett Myers was on the track with Levi Kitchen, he probably walks away from him because 7 seconds turns to 14, turns to 21 pretty quick. But
right,
just like visibly, like I just really, before we dive into the results of this race, I want to give a shout out to any of these guys who throw their hat in the ring and say, I'm going to compete against the best in the world because the difference between these racers is so minute, and it's really incredible to see what they do. And we go to the races on Saturdays to watch them make it look very easy, and they do exactly that.
Right. I mean, you talk about Crockett. I mean, he said 7 seconds. I mean, could that have been someone in front of him took his line?
Sure.
Could he have blown one corner for 2 seconds? You know, could he have qualified better? We don't really know. We'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
But it just goes to show that things are tight. I mean, I don't think it's ever been so tight. I mean, bikes are really, really good right now. Everyone's got a good bike. So, you know, it definitely comes down to setup and line selection for sure, and fitness, really. Like you said, that seven seconds a lap doesn't sound much like that when you break it down, but when you break that over 30 minutes,
it's a couple laps.
That's
21 seconds over. And honestly, the biggest thing, obviously, is on that very first lap. Like it's not like you're all putting a flyer out there. The guy who in 39th runs into somebody runs over him, and he's probably 35 to 40 seconds back on lap one. Never mind right. The difference lap over lap. But there are some guys who can have an absolutely butt ugly start and then still turn that into a half decent moto. And we're going to talk about them. So let's go straight to the 250 class right off the hop. And, before we get into the results, let's just talk about some, I guess we could call it some controversy. When you essentially have two situations that to the naked eye look very similar, but one's a penalty and one is not. Obviously, you're going to get some disagreement, especially online, because what's the internet without an argument? Hayden Deegan, 1-1 on the day, not penalized for going off the track twice in the first moto and once in the second moto. I actually tweeted during the first moto, is Hayden Deegan going to get penalized? Like I said that preemptively, and then
right,
the whole thing came down. Like, honestly, there was one in the first moto that I thought was more egregious where he ended up having to go around a jump, and it's very obvious. You can see the back tire spinning because of the dust coming off the back tire. Like, that's just not him rolling speed. That's him on the gas. And I'm not here to, like, beg on Hagen Deegan by any means, but, like, to me, they both looked very similar, like similar enough that the same call should have been made for both, in my opinion. So, like, in my opinion, it should either have been no call for either one or a penalty for both. What are your thoughts on the whole matter?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a professional sport, right? So you and there's rules and guidelines that we all have to abide by.
Yes.
Again, you know, how did the AMA enforce it? Why did they not? And why shouldn't they? You know, where the valet was, you know, not that bad, really. I mean, and also, too, as we've seen, and we just talked about speed. I mean, when you're committed at that speed, that process system of going that fast, you know, the one shot of Deegan where he went on the inside of the big marker, coming out of the left-hand turn, and it's like we just said, we can't even keep these guys in sight. So
yeah,
at that split second. But he had done enough laps around that track and knew where that marker was.
Hayden Deegan at Paula, also known as Fox Raceway, I think he's probably got about a million laps around that place, yeah.
Right. So, again, we know things happen quickly. I'm not here to defend him either way, but, you know, it's tough. I mean, you're wide open. You're going for a championship. There's money on the line. There's egos. There's everything else. They're split-second decisions, but I don't know. He could have checked up and stayed inside the lines, I think. That's my opinion.
Yeah. First of all, I think both guys need to work on staying on the track, although it happens. You go off the track, you're trying to, like, all these guys are pushing the limit, although I will mention that Kitchen seemed to be able to keep two wheels with inside the markers. But either way, it didn't seem like a far gone conclusion in the first moto. I think if Kitchen maybe doesn't have a track marker, and we're talking about track markers again, if they didn't have it lodged into his boot, he very well could have finished off that moto on the top step of the podium. But even still, that would have still only had these guys swap out on motos, and they would have ended up, like, they're tied on points rather than Levi being down by six. But either way, you can't take anything away from Hayden as far as his riding goes. He's clearly fit. He's obviously fast. And, he had great starts, both motos. You get the whole shot in the second moto that he's credited with third across the stripe. But I think he might have been even closer within a couple of corners after the beginning of lap two for the first moto. You can't take anything away from the kids. He's rolled into the outdoors. He's come to play.
Yeah, look, I mean, those couple little infractions there, I really don't think that they were going to change the outcome of the day.
No.
So I don't, you know, again, I know it's a viewing point and everything else. But like I said, I just don't think that it was really going to change the outcome of the day. I mean, Kitchen in the second moto was a lot closer and kept him honest. He couldn't have made a mistake anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's I think, and that's going to be probably the blueprint for the rest of the summer, really, of, like, it's going to come down to these two or three guys. You know, Hymus is in there. It's pretty close. You know, he did a good job. That's probably his best finish ever. So, it's going to be good.
Yes, I think that is his best finish. I think he did get a podium in a moto at Thunder Valley, and that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek because, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was the first time that they had a brand-new motor package in that bike from last year, and they were very happy with the performance of that engine during those races and going forward. The Honda's had a little bit extra horsepower under the hood ever since.
Okay.
But this will sound kind of crazy because often we don't take a lot from the first round results. Oh, it's only the first round. We'll see what happens. But just looking at these results, I have a hard time seeing the rest of the rounds going a whole lot differently. I think you could totally take, like, you could take fourth through 10th, put them in a blender and, like, just throw them out on the floor and however they land. Like, I wouldn't be surprised any way, shape, or form. Like, if you saw Joe Shimoda in fourth place and Hymus back in 10th, or Ryder DeFrancesco grabs himself a fourth place and you've got Joey Savacci leading some laps at some point, I'm not surprised in the least. but I do expect this championship to essentially come down to the top three guys that were in that they were in the top three the whole day long. With Tom Vielle, I think on tracks that he's more comfortable on, I think he's going to assert himself and win some motos, maybe chop into that points lead that that Hayden already has. And if Hayden continues to ride the way he's at, I think the only person that's going to have a really is going to have a lot for him weekend in, weekend out is Levi Kitchen.
Right. I think that I'm 100% with you there. I think that they'll all win one. I mean, then again, it's hard to say, but I mean, after the weekend and the tracks are going to get a little more technical as we move out of here into the East Coast, a little more deep. We're going to get some weather. We're going to get some mud races. So it's, you know, it is always up in the air, but I think you're right. The top three right now will probably all win a moto each somewhere along the line.
Oh, for sure.
The likes of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're all going to mix it up. I'm pretty sure you might see Savachi bust out a podium here or there.
Yeah, I can see Shimoda going 2-1 on a day and winning an overall. But I like respectfully to Joe. I like for whatever reason I don't see him. Like if he does end up in the championship fight or like within swinging distance of these guys, I see him being like a pest at, in the fourth place spot rather than someone who climbs from sixth to become a threat every single weekend. That's just how I feel about it.
Right. I mean, he's got some shoes to fill, right? I mean, the Lawrence brothers rode that bike before and they did well on it. So, you know, he's probably got some pressure there as well, but also too, I mean, he's got the best guys in the world surrounding him, so you know they should be able to help him level up, bring him up to the next level as well. So only time will tell on that one.
Fair enough. Like, do you text Shane Drew on a weekly basis like I do, getting him just to sweat about getting the Shimoda machine to handle properly, or what?
No, I don't do that anymore. I used to, but we solved plenty of the world's problems on the 91 freeway back in the early 2000s, trust me.
Oh, I love it.
And you travel to Honda.
Drewski is one of my favorite people in the industry. A couple of people that sort of like a couple of results that jump off the page at me. First top five in a national for obviously it was going to be their first result, period. But Jalik Swole, I think that he surprised a few people, not Jalik getting a fifth, because he's won races before. I think even if he got a podium, you're not totally have your wig blown back. But good to see the Triumph have a really strong ride with a fifth. In fact, he was as high up, I think he got fourth in one of the motos, if I'm not mistaken, which looked really, really strong. I like to see that. Honestly, this is maybe the biggest surprise. Maybe it shouldn't be, because I talked to this kid and he's about as serious as a heart attack about fitness and going fast. But I don't think that too many people had Mark Finnis on their bingo card being the fastest Club MX rider in the 250 class with the likes of his teammates like Cody Shock and Jet Reynolds. He led the team with a 12th overall. Pretty strong ride from the kid.
Yeah, true. I mean, when you talk about Swole, I mean, hey, any manufacturer out there right now or team would give anything to have a top five finish at the first national.
Yeah.
You know, and the goal that we always had was, you know, when you leave California, obviously the series is a little different now to how it was back when I was on the road. You know, your goal was always to try and have all your guys in the top 10, right? Or
right.
Close to it, because that's how the series just swings. So, you know, good job on Swole. I mean, and for Triumph, first national, and they're in the top five. That's great. What will next week bring? We don't know. For Mark, I mean, obviously, 14-11, that's a pretty good result for the first national, really.
Yeah. No,
and he's an East Coast guy in California, and every, you know, you always get the east-west and the tracks and the dry and the deep and all that sort of stuff. But anything in that top 12 to And that's a pretty good spot to be sitting right now. And you can back it up into this weekend's race. You're in some good spirits.
Yeah, now you're cooking with gas. I think, and maybe you can speak to this because you're on Honda when you had young kids coming in. You have an older rider, a veteran that's sort of like leading the pack, so to speak. For a guy like Julien Beaumaire, who like, for all intents and purposes, this is his rookie season. I know he raced a couple of races at the end of last year, didn't score points to earn a national number. That's why he's 929. But an 11th place finish, good ride. Like, he's up there with a lot of the other youngsters. But what I like about his program right now is that obviously, like, he's totally there. They want to see some results. They always want to see results. KTM is about racing and they want results. But, obviously their flagship rider, the guy that they're looking for wins and championships is Tom Vial. And, like, having Beaumier as sort of like, you can sort of just like kind of lurk in the shadows a little bit and just get your work done out of, Lake Havasu AZ, looking pretty good on that, 250 KTM.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, again, like you mentioned, last year we had a couple here or there, didn't really score a point, and now first national sitting 11th.
Yeah.
13.9 scores. I mean, it's pretty damn good.
Certainly. No, he absolutely is. And, another guy who was also on a KTM that could have had a better day, 14th, before having a crash at the end of the last race. I can't even imagine riding for 40 minutes and then having a big one at the very end. And then, like, first of all, you're busted up. Like, usually if you have a big crash and you end up 36th, like, you pull out of a race, that usually happens early enough in the race where you're like, okay, at least I'll be a little bit more fresh for the second moto. Not the case for Ryder McNabb, who hit the deck hard out of Minnedosa, Canada, pride and joy of Manitoba, where I'm from. He scored points in the second moto despite a beat up body and probably at that point still a twisted up AEO KTM. Hats off to him. And there's a number of kids throughout the latter half of the field that I was surprised had some good rides.
It's quite funny you say that, where he had a 36.19 finish. So obviously the first moto was a little tough for him. The second moto, he dug deep. And then his teammate, Talon Hawkins, is right behind him with 35.20. Yeah. So it's like,
photo
right
shoot.
There. Yeah, for sure.
Also, before we get to the 450 class, I want to give a quick shout out to CJ Bernard. I believe it's Casey Bernard, but either way, 775 out of AZ. You see him riding the RMX series a ton, tons of speed, and he put it straight into the motos. And then Gavin Bruff out of Mesquite, Nevada. Of course, his parents and his family own and run Mesquite MX. Amazing track, great facility, and they're a big part of the RMX series. He ended up going to the LCQ qualifying. He was 35th in qualifying, but again, only half of a second off just qualifying straight into the motos. Like, LCQs are exciting for the point that you get, like, it's one chance to get in, but it's also daunting in the fact that if you don't get it done, you're heading back to the truck with your head hung rather low, and you probably don't even go watch the motos because you're so bitter about it. Gavin Bruff gets it done, the 670 in your program, rocking that MSR gear. He had a good roto, good motos, strong in both races. I think he was like 29-32. So
29-32.
Yeah, that's honestly, like, some people look at that, oh, 29-32, like, is that something to write home about? I'm like, well, mid-moto, both of those races, he was on the outside of those positions looking in, so he moved up and rode very well. Same could be said about Revan Gordon, of course, brother to Landon Gordon, who is an absolute pedigreed racer from the Team Green Kawasaki. He had his first national and did quite well in his own right as well.
Yeah, I mean, for all these guys, I mean, like we said, it's a massive feat to qualify, right?
Yep.
And like you spoke about, last chance qualifiers, you know, the highs and lows of, am I going to get in? Am I not going to get in? But I mean, these results here, they're all solid building blocks for these guys, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, I got in, I did it. Maybe it's their first national for some of them. It's like, okay, that's what the track's like. That's what the intensity's like. Maybe that opens some doors. Now I really need to know what I need to work on, you know, because you, once you see something, you can't unsee it, right? So just open some more doors and windows for these guys to move forward.
Yeah, no, for sure. You get a taste of it, and all of a sudden you put it in the motos every single time going forward. Moving over to the 450 class, brought to you by Fox Racing Canada. Check out the brand new LE gear. It's probably in your local dealer or your favorite e-tailer that's available. And once again, for the now 12th time in a row. He's never lost outdoors. Can I get an Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi?
Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi.
Love it.
Good for you.
Like, yeah, like the brothers Lawrence. Are we going to get used to this? Like, this is unprecedented. We have never in the sport had brothers who perform at this level. Of course, Luke Smertl has another pair of brothers over in Europe on Husqvarna and KTM doing something rather similar, although a few years behind. Hunta and Jet, like this was as picture perfect as a weekend as you can get. I guess the only thing better would have been if Hunter had been second place, just putting it in perfect in every single lap in the second moto as well. But tough to beat that for the Lawrence clan at a track that they probably have a lot of time on because they were in SoCal for a long time before they went to Florida.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like all those factor teams that you know. Pilot on a Tuesday is just the thing you do, but you know after watching the race and you watch Hunter and Jet, it's like, well, realistically, that's their everyday deal.
Yeah,
right. They're riding and training together, so they know each other inside and out. So
yeah, that must have felt like a Wednesday with just more people watching.
But I mean, Chase did come back in the second moto, and
oh, hell yeah,
he did very good.
If
so, again, it'd be interesting. I mean, it's. I think it's a bit of a bummer that, no Webb.
Yes. No Roczen, no Eli.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that would have changed the 1-1 outcome for Lawrence. It definitely would have put some more caps amongst the pigeons, right?
Yeah, and like one of the things that I sort of brought up last year is. It's one thing that obviously like a guy like Eli Tomac can just have a day and take a 1-1 away from somebody. But if you just think of last year and this year a little bit as well, with the guys being hurt and certain guys not racing or not able to participate, it's not just the finishes. It's the start. When you inject four or five other top level guys who could possibly get a whole shot or put their nose in there, you just increase the overall chance of something going sideways on the start. Like I was telling my fiance, like it's almost more, I don't know if it's more impressive, but it's more of an anomaly that Jet Lawrence has gone through the first corner 24 times and never been on it. Like he's never been upside down. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like how many, like even for a guy like Aaron Plessinger, he comes around on the first lap, 38th. Like if that's Jet, as with all of the respect to his powers, I don't know that he's coming back to a first place position after being 38th on lap one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe we won't. It's hard to say, but yeah, starts are critical. Especially in this, you know, when you look at that lineup, nearly all the top 10 guys all have a championship.
Yep. Sometimes multiple.
And there's a couple of guys outside the 10 that have championships that didn't have a good day, or they're coming back from injury, like Christian Craig or someone. And they're solid guys. They know how to win races.
The only guy in the 450 top 10 that doesn't have a championship is Freddie Norrin. Shout out to Freddie. That was in qualifying. That wasn't even in the overall. And then in the only guy that doesn't have a championship in the top 10 overall was Philip Nicoletti, who he's podiumed outdoors. Like there, so it's. Yeah, it's incredible. Of course, Philip goes 9-9 for 10th overall. It is the most Phil Nicoletti thing that I've ever seen in my entire life. Not to get off of Jet and Hunter here, but honestly, like the way Jet's riding, it's going to be a long summer, baby.
Yeah, I think Sexton's going to get in there and mix it up. I really do.
If he doesn't make that mistake in the second moto late with about three laps to go, I think there was about 2:30 left on the clock. If he doesn't make that mistake, does he put up more of a fight? Like I think I won't just go ahead and say it, but I think he had a very good chance of making a pass there.
Right. I mean, the only thing we don't know is what else Jet has in the tank, right? I mean, we went through this in the McGrath era. Like, you know, McGrath was good, and then, you know, someone would challenge him and beat him, and then he would find a way to level up and do it again. And then,
Damon Huffman would come by and he'd be like, no thanks.
Yep. So there's, you know, there's a, yeah, it's an unknown. So it's going to be interesting. I really hope to see, again, I love people going 1-1 because I was part of a team that went, you know, 24 motos straight as well. But I also like to see everyone mix it up and make it interesting. I see both sides.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something there. The top privateer effort being Dylan Ferrandis. He's on the Honda. Not to besmirch the good name of David Eller or Phoenix Honda, but I can't imagine that a Phoenix Honda is on the same level as a Star Racing Yamaha or even a Troy Lee Gas or obviously Factory Honda is Factory Honda. Not to say he's bringing a knife to a gunfight because we're in the four stroke car, fuel injected era where these bikes are awesome. But at some point having a factory equipment and all the smart people that come around that, have its benefits. So I think that's even that much more impressive that, that Dylan was able to go fourth overall.
Yeah. I mean, look, they have some good guys on their team. I mean, you got, you know, Factory Connection involved and you got Josh Wisner, you know, kind of the crew chief and, you know, Josh has been around and seen a lot. He worked for Honda. I worked with him at Geico. So he's a good, knowledgeable guy. I mean, obviously it just comes down to, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, what you have access to and what you don't. And then you go, well, I'm just going to have to make it work. I don't have any other choice. I don't have that part. I don't have this. I just got to do what I can do. So, you know, to be sitting fourth on the day as a privateer Honda team, I mean, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
When you look after that from Barsha, Cooper, Anderson, Plessinger, Stewart, you know, and the list goes on, guys that are actually, you know, with support, full crews, it's a pretty damn good effort for Anderson and the team and to the whole team as well, for sure.
Yeah, and same goes for the Club MX Yamaha of Phil Nicoletti. He's 35 years old, the same age as me. I work out every day. I ride every week. I know exactly how this body feels, pushing myself to the limit and riding and working out. I ran a 5K today in 27 minutes, 2 seconds. Thank you very much. I almost died. I almost goddamn died. But then you got Freddie Norrin. Who I honestly, if I'm not mistaken, Freddie's the same age as me as well. Like the three of us have enough crow's feet to go around. And it's 10th and it's 11th place. It's good to see 450 journeyman privateers that are just taking care of business. Love to see it.
I mean, he's been around for a long time. Like you said, he's possibly your age.
He rode for Factory
as well.
Honda in what was that like? He did a Factory Honda stint in 2011.
Yeah.
13 or maybe.
Yeah,
during Troy Lee gear, I remember that.
Was it a fill-in or what? Did they?
It was a fill-in, It guaranteed. Yeah, if I'm remembering properly, it was either a fill-in for Davey Millsaps or Josh Grant. Probably more likely Josh Grant because that did not go well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I love Josh Grant, but that his stint at Factory Honda was short-lived. Mainly, I think it was a knee injury that he raced two or three races for those guys.
Yeah.
Christian Craig, better than I expected, honestly. Not to say that I expect Christian Craig to be a top 15 guy, but a guy who everyone said is he's not going to be 100%. Can you expect any much better from him? Current condition?
No, I don't think you can. I mean, again, top 15 again in any national is.
Yeah. And coming from, you look at the guys he's around, he started out 33rd and 39th to finish 15th and 17th, which, to a guy like Craig, tastes like a gulp of trash juice. But,
I mean, he made, past half the field to an extent.
Yeah, well, like, honestly, if you're thinking, like, he doesn't have a lot of time on the bike, he's still dealing with the elbow, like, you got pictures of him in the pits between motos, basically just, like, literally laying his arm into a cooler to try and, like, either numb it or have it feel better, get some swelling down. So, yeah, right. If your name is Grant Harlan, Shane McElrath, Derek Kelly, Jerry Robin, like, you're like, yeah, I should probably be beating that guy at this juncture, because he's a walking wounded right now. With not a lot of seat time.
Right. And he's had a lot of experience on 450s. He rode,
of course.
You know, he was another fill-in guy for Kenny there for a little while, and he led races.
Yep.
So, you know, he has a lot of experience, but hopefully he can pull it all back together and get that arm working.
Definitely, definitely. So, like, of the rest of the field, is there anyone that sort of jumps off the page at you looking at results? Or is there anyone that you really thought is, like, they had a day that sort of surprised you?
I expected Justin Hill probably be a little higher up, maybe.
I think he expected that as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, going back to what we're talking about, these guys, how fast they are. You got Robbie Wageman, you know, 29.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to go places like Glen Helen for Two Stroke Cup and all that. And like, you know, you go, hey, man, how can those guys go so fast? Yet, you know, sitting outside the top 20, but it's still a mean effort to get to where these guys are, every single one of them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And just to like, this is just the fan in me talking. I know logistically it makes no sense. I know fiscally it makes no sense. But if Yamaha and KTM, GasGas, and Husky could somehow wrangle up the sponsorship needed to put an extra bike on the truck and like have one 2-stroke entrance. Those bikes are homologated. I can do a Yamaha. I just think it would be cool. I don't care how they do. I don't care, you know what I mean, though? No offense, but to, like, a guy like Grant Harlan. Like, Grant Harlan getting 17th, or Grant Harlan on a YZ250 two-stroke getting 23rd is the same to me. As far as, like, the results.
Look at it. So, in 39th place for the day was Josh Moseman.
Sure.
350 KTM.
Yep.
Now, if you give him 300 KTM, where would he have sat?
Probably not make the motos. I don't think a 2-stroke's helping him at all, if that's what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I just think that, you know,
the 300 would be dope, but it would have to be a 250.
Right, but the tracks, the 4-strokes make the tracks so much different to...
Right. You'd have to race 4-stroke lines on a 2-stroke bike. Like that is the other thing that like people don't really think about it. When 90% of the bikes out there are 4-strokes, they're 4-stroke lines. Yeah. Like the way they sweep corners, the way the braking bumps develop, it's completely different.
Right. For sure.
I think it would be neat.
You notice that when you ride Glen Helen all the time and then there's 4-strokes and then you go do 2-stroke cup, everything just forms different. It's hard.
100%. But like this is, I'm just being playing devil's advocate here. So like, yeah. Say if you took Jake Masterpool, Brad West, and give me Rodriguez. There's your KTM, your GasGas, and your Husky, and your Yamaha riders, and you just put them on 2-strokes. I think you would have a segment of fans. Who, like, I guarantee, no offense to any one of those guys, but, like, probably there weren't any fans that went over to the other Masterpool, Jake Masterpool's rig, and were, like, giving him high fives and being like, your bike's sick. But if they had a nice cone pipe on there, maybe they call up a certain Australian guy who puts in all kinds of miles on a road bike. Maybe they call him up, make the pipe beautiful. Maybe do a throwback KTM early 2000s graphic kit and do the whole thing. You get guys like me who just love that shit and just go over there. And maybe I'm just talking out my ass and adding some extra seconds onto this podcast. But I think it would be cool.
Well, I mean, that's what Stank Dog did, right?
Yeah, but he also smoked a bunch of weed and, like, banged lots of girls. So it was different.
Right.
Yeah, you should have seen the young lady that came out of his trailer, or I guess it was a van. Millville 2019, like early in the morning. Yeah, she did the little walk of shame. I'm sure that's been happening in the privateer pits since like Brad Lackey's days.
Right.
You know what actually would be funny? Would be like, honestly, the funny thing about motocross is that like these guys have the memory for it, but you'd never get it out of a moto guy because like there's just not a lot of stories that sort of come out. But like, I don't know if they're like Stank Dog is a good example, but like there was a guy like that in 1975. And I guarantee like the guys, like maybe not the top guys. Like, I don't think Brad Lackey knew about Stank Dog, like the Stank Dog equivalent from 1975. But I guarantee there was some probably like wild guy in the back of the pits who could like hang a wheel with some of these guys for a couple of corners who was just like smoking like 1975 weed in his van and going really fast. I need to text Scott Burnworth. Not saying that it's Scott Burnworth being that person, but I guarantee he probably knows who that was.
I'm sure he would.
And I'm not just talking about Ron Lachine. I'm talking like a privateer of that caliber.
Right.
Perfect. Fair enough. So I'm just talking here. Scotty Verhage, that's an odd name for someone from Paris, France. Paris, have you ever been to Paris?
Yes, Bercy Supercross.
Bercy, fair enough. Yeah, like what was your take on Paris?
Oh man, it was the early 2000s, the first time I'd ever been there. It was interesting, very interesting.
I would say like I went to Paris last year for Ernie's the Motocross Nations. I would say that Paris is about 100 times less romantic than anyone thinks it is.
I don't know. All I've seen was the inside of the dome and the motel room. I didn't get to do anything when I was there.
Fair enough. What were you in Paris for? What was the reasoning there?
We took Preston? I was at American Honda at the time. We took Preston, Gosler.
Gosler. I was gonna say like you had Little Goose.
We had Little Goose. Yeah.
Okay, you would have worked with Goose and his kid was hanging out. Like that must have been.
Yep.
And like, and that's right around the time when he won. Did he win the first day of the, what's it called, U.S. Open?
Goose. He won a few little races here and there. He won some supercrosses. He was good, but he had bad ankles. Good.
Yeah, he was always
he couldn't run, and he had fused ankles, and poor kid.
Fair enough. Yeah, if you could ever stop Mike Gosler from fishing, he would be a good podcast. But he would tell me he's going fishing.
He's got some good stories. Goose has got good stories.
Well, anyone who I would love to be a fly on the wall for Mike Gosler and Chad Watts having a beer together.
Goose doesn't drink.
Okay, well, that's even better then. Even like, okay, no alcohol is involved. But for those who don't know, Chad Watts was, of course, the mechanic for Ricky Carmichael throughout the very tail end of his amateur career, his first nationals, all the way up to, I believe, the beginning of the 2003 Supercross season.
Yeah.
And then things went sideways. Usually when there's not a lot of details, it's a bad thing. And then as far, that's what I've come to know in motocross anyway. And then, Goose takes over, at like the mid portion or the tail end of 03. And then he has a perfect season with Ricky, with Suzuki or with on Hondas in 04 outdoors. And then Ricky brings him with him to Suzuki after a lot of years with Honda. He was with Lamson, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and then he was with Yogi for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Who ended up having to work with Seb at Honda?
Well, that was
Sebastian Torchelli. Yes. Oh,
was
my gosh. There.
And then Sam kind of moved on a little bit to different areas. And, I can't remember his name.
Was Deloria there at all?
Delorio was there. Paul worked for LaRocco for a little
while. LaRocco, yeah, the four-stroke.
That was one of those, the bike had to be built at Honda, but then they would push it over to the connection truck. Yeah, I can't remember the guy that replaced
Brian Kinney. That's who it was. Brian and then Kinney ended up working with Tim Ferry in the 02 season.
Right.
Over at Yamaha.
And then he, at Honda, he was transitioning into RC cars at the end. He was a very smart guy.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, yeah. Okay. Perfect. So before we let you go here on the podcast, appreciate the time. Mm-hmm. For those who are not already following Hoppo Hoppo on Instagram, please go ahead and follow along with his story, as well as if you're not listening to The Racer's Mindset, like maybe you see that get downloaded into your phone. You're like, I don't know what the fuck that is, so I'm not going to listen to it. Shame on you, first of all. Secondly, listen to it because Hoppo, otherwise known as Andrew Hobson, is my co-host on that show, and he's damn smart. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Awesome, dude. Awesome. Well, yeah, like I'll let you go here on the podcast. Won't you come back on with me in a couple weeks' time and do another one with me?
Yeah, sure. Let's see three or four rounds in when we get back east, and there's some good tracks, and let's see how it changes.
Yeah, once we get to that beautiful dirt over at High Point, things always seem to get thrown on their ear. Thanks, Hoppo.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get it.
Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2.